Hello, everyone. This is Dolores Cannon again with the Metaphysical Hour. I hope everybody out there had a really nice Thanksgiving and with your families, and everything turned out just fine. I hope you're not out spending money now on Christmas shopping and spend it all before Christmas ever gets here.
Well, if it's their choice to do that.
Yeah.
There's abundance. They can if they want.
Sure. We're living in the land of abundance. My daughter Julia is here with me again.
Yeah, the loudmouth, the other part of the comedy routine here. So
yeah. Okay, we don't have a guest tonight. We are going to continue talking about our trip. We got about halfway through it last time, and there was a whole lot more we wanted to bring up. But then we'll probably, I don't know if we'll have guests next time, or we'll just go back to talking about metaphysical stuff. But I always like to tell them about the trip and all the things that happened. Before we get going, let me give out the toll-free number, and anyone is welcome to call in. We never know where we're going when we're doing talks like this. Okay, so the toll-free number is 1-888-815-9756. 888-815-9756. Okay, try to remember how far we got last time. Because as you know, we just came back from this long 5-week trip. We just got in before Thanksgiving. I think we finally recovered from jet lag.
Yeah. That takes a while.
It was so funny. You're crossing so many time zones and the dateline. And over there it was summer. And it was getting dark about 8:30. Mm-hmm. Then we crossed back against all these time zones and jet and date lines. We get home, found out they also had a daylight saving time that gone off. So that we lost another hour.
Well, to me, I think that's probably the dark. Getting dark so early, that was probably one of the harder things. It was the cold and then the dark early, because that was the biggest adjustment.
Because over there it was summer.
All of a sudden, half the day is gone.
Yeah.
It's just gone.
Over there it was summer, and we get back here, and we begin to get cold. And Julia said we missed the whole fall because we were gone. We come right back in where it's cold.
Yeah, pretty much.
And here it's getting dark after 5:30, before 5:30. And she said the first thing she noticed when she got back, the office called. And she said, what are you doing still at work? It's the middle of the night.
It felt like it was 10 o'clock at night by the darkness. And it was just after 5. It was like not quite 5:30. And then I thought about, well, that would be about right over there, the amount of darkness it was. It probably was like 10 o'clock over, that would be that darkness. And so that's what it felt like. It was like, it's so late. What are you still doing there?
And it was their normal time to
right.
leave work.
Mm-hmm.
So everything is like it's been turned upside down, and that's what's hardest time for our bodies. Of course, mm-hmm. we do have the jet lag we had to get over. That takes several
mm-hmm.
days.
Right.
You want to sleep at odd times. You wake up in the middle of the night,
mm-hmm.
and also you want to eat at odd times.
Right.
Till your body gets back into its kilter. But it is funny to come back, and all of a sudden it's dark mm-hmm. so early.
Yeah. Yeah, I felt like we missed something, like we were shortchanged or something. Something happened there, so.
But, well, like I think I said it, when we were on the plane coming back, and they have the little map on the plane that shows where you are, the little plane to show where you are, and it showed when we crossed the dateline. And I said to the man sitting next to me, well, now it is yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're going over, it's
mm-hmm.
tomorrow.
Right.
Anyway, I think it shows how silly time is anyway.
It does. It's nothing. It's totally played with all the time. So that shows you it can't be too real.
Because the ETs are always saying, time is an illusion. It's not mm-hmm. real. And they say mankind is probably the only species in the universe that's figured out a way to measure something that does not exist.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're doing stuff like this, it becomes very obvious. Time, there is no such thing. You're going back and forth. You're gaining hours, losing hours, gaining mm-hmm. a day, losing a day. And it's over there, it's night. Here, mm-hmm. it's day.
Yeah, so it's manipulated all over the place.
It shows you, and we're actually living in the future.
Mm-hmm. Well, when we call them, we're talking to the future. So, I mean,
when
you know.
We call them, they're uh-huh. they're actually tomorrow.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So it shows you there is no such thing as time anyway. It is something we've just invented to kind of keep us on track, I guess, mm-hmm. have something to
the
measure
guideline.
It by.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm.
And when you're doing this, it's just really obvious mm-hmm. that it there isn't any such thing. So I can see why the ETs get confused by us. We make things so set in stone mm-hmm. and so way it's supposed to be this way, and actually it's not.
Right, and actually we're being shown that because I'm getting a visual right now. It's like if you can just stretch it out just a little bit, it really won't take that much to pull it out, and you will understand the whole thing of simultaneous time, okay? So it's within that where you're going, you know, this is just crazy because it's all, we're talking the future, we're talking the past. See, if you can just pull it out a little bit more, you'll totally get the simultaneous time.
You think that'll be part of explaining it?
Yeah, because it's in that contract, because of the construct that we have for time, that's what makes it where we have difficulty understanding it. But see, you're eliminating that construct, and by doing that and just enlarging your view, just a little, it's like it doesn't take much. It is what they're showing me. I don't have it all yet. It's just like just open it up a little bit more, and you'll totally get it because it's all within that. And so, if that makes any sense, but
because
that's from them to you, so.
Well, you know, if those of you read my books, we've been dealing with simultaneous time in my books for many years, and in the beginning, I had no idea what it was, and I said, don't ask me to explain it, but the audience of the lectures wanted me to explain it, because when we were doing the Nostradamus, and they're talking to you.
They're talking to me. They're like, oh, they're trying to push in, and I'm like, that's what they're saying.
Tell
you've
them
got
to hold that
thought
a minute.
Yeah, I'm like, just a minute.
But when I was working with the Nostradamus material back in the 80s, you know, a lot of this stuff was totally new to me. And in those days, I was speaking to Nostradamus while he's alive, living in the past, in his time period when he's actually writing the prophecies.
Right.
And that seemed hard to understand because he was very emphatic. He was not dead. He was not a spirit. I was speaking to him while he was living his life, and we were actually interacting with his life with him. And then I said that brought up the concept of simultaneous time, which I didn't understand
right.
then, if I understand it now.
Right.
But it was all... People, when I do it before an audience back in those days, they said, explain it to them. And I said, I was doing the best I could. It just meant that everything is happening at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
It's all, there is no past, no
it's
future, no
occurring.
Present.
Yeah.
It's all at the same time.
Right.
And I asked them at that time, how can that be? Because we know we're born as a baby, we grow, we're a child, and we become older, we become a teenager, we become an adult. How can that be if it's all happening at the same time? They say that's because you're using the wrong words. It's not all happening at the same time. It's existing at the same time.
And while that doesn't seem like that's an important differentiation, it really is. Those are two very different words.
But it also brings in the concepts then that Nostradamus even tried to make that there are many futures.
Yeah.
The future is not set in stone. Mm-hmm. There's many probabilities and possibilities depending on the choice that you make and the decisions you make. Because, you know, in your life you have crossroads you come to when you're trying to decide something. Should I get this job? Should I leave this job? Should I get a divorce? Should I marry this woman?
Mm-hmm.
All kinds of decisions, you put a lot of energy into thinking which way you're going to go. Then you finally make a decision, I'm going to do this. Well, you know your life could have been totally different if you've gone the other way. So that's where all these probabilities and possibilities exist out there. All traveling down different timelines, whichever one you choose to focus on.
Mm-hmm.
That's the important thing, which one you choose to focus on.
Mm-hmm.
And it was funny. When I was doing the Nostradamus material, too, they told... I'm trying to get there, but that part about... They said, you don't realize how much of his day you take up.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
because to me, it was like an hour session I spent with him, and they said with him, it was most of his day. And I said, that means for him, time was longer than it was for us, moving slower.
Well, our time is speeding up, and probably ever since then, it's all, from that time to here, it was probably before our time even really started speeding up, it probably has always been getting faster.
It was slower for him
right.
than it was for us.
Mm-hmm.
But then when I was doing the ET material for the custodians, and I was mm-hmm. talking to the one alien, the ET, was a woman. She was a woman doctor on board the spaceship. And we were doing several sessions in one day because I could only be there one day a month where I had to drive to. And so at the end of the one session, I told her we were going to stop and get something to eat. We'd be back in about 2 hours, and we would continue. So when I came back after eating lunch, we were trying to contact her again, and it was a little more difficult. When we finally got her, I said, well, it's been 2 hours. She said, oh, no, it's been a year in your time, and I'm not where you left me. I'm on the other side of the galaxy.
Yeah, so see, her time is going much, much faster than our time. See, so it's like as it keeps going out, it's going faster and faster.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to understand. For Nostradamus, it was slower than us.
And this was slower than hers.
Yeah.
So,
And they also told us, I think all of this is in one of the new books, or it's going in another book. I'm working on so much material right now about how whenever we were talking to Nostradamus in those days, and John, the astrologer, appeared to him in his living room there when he was working with him, Nostradamus saw John as a glowing energy spirit. And they said the amazing thing was, what was it, that if somebody from the past...
Yeah, this was in...
Was that in one of my last
books? One of your books, I'm trying to remember which one it was. I'm almost going to say it was one of the convolutas, but that doesn't
might have
feel
been.
Right. But, yeah, but they said if you were to go back to the 1500s, just that if you were just, if we were to just time travel back to the 1500s, we would appear as a glowing being because our vibration is so much faster than theirs was at that time. So that
and they said if
exactly.
we were to go into the future,
right,
we would appear to those people as glowing spirits because the vibration.
No. If we went to the past,
but the
because
vibration,
our vibration is faster than the ones from the past. The future. They would look glowing to us.
That's what I meant.
Yeah, they would be glowing to us.
Because they're all vibrating at different frequencies and different vibrations.
Yeah, and then, the faster it goes, then the lighter it is. So.
And it deals with the dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
So that goes along with that idea, with the strange, weird stuff about time, and also that all the possibilities. And we get bits and pieces of this from all these years of work.
Right.
We don't know where it's going. But I saw it on the internet, but I also found it in some of my material about how time has speeded up, and that it says we are actually are living 16-hour days right now.
And I, because that you've been saying that for a little while, so I would bet you it's probably even less than that now. So cause I think it was while
in my work,
that.
It was a couple of years ago or more when they told
me
that.
So it could be.
Even more.
Even shorter now. I would doubt it because it just seems like you're just starting and then the day's over. I mean, it's how do you get work accomplished in this amount of time? Except that we can manipulate time. So, you know, that's where you have to work yourself around it. Like, oh, you know, I have plenty of time to do whatever it is I have to do and then you can make it happen. But,
so
everything just moves.
Well, they said the clocks may say that you're still living a 24-hour day, but they said you really aren't. This is how fast everything is happening.
Your clocks don't know what time it is.
No, when I got
okay,
back...
Okay, everybody, I got to tell you something here. This part, she is obsessed with time. She has clocks. That's her. She loves clocks. She just absolutely loves clocks. She has clocks everywhere. And right now, every one of them has a different time on it. So she is living in a time warp, a time vortex, a time something, I don't know. So see, there, you're the epitome of playing with time.
Since we got back and the daylight saving time went off, I haven't changed the clocks yet to the right time.
And then I think you have one that's the right time. And then everything else is 5 minutes fast, 5 minutes slow, an hour and 5 minutes, whatever.
Well, I had my first client today since I got back from the trip. I wanted some time off to adjust to the jet lag, and my clocks in my office are all off.
Oh, I can't imagine.
So, yeah, I said, I have no idea what time it is. I think I'm home. When I'm traveling, it's like, where am I? I get up before an audience and I look out at the people. What country am I in? What city is this?
And it's sad when we're saying, what country am I in, when we're in America? And we're going, oh, yeah. It's just, the energy doesn't feel like America for some reason. And it just goes, you know, it's like it feels like some other countries feel like America and America feels like other countries or something.
But sometimes I don't know until they open their mouths and start asking questions. Oh, yes. I'm not in America anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Like Wizard of Oz. I'm not in Kansas anymore.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yep.
But, yeah, you said the same thing. We'd be in a foreign country, and you feel like you're in the States.
Yeah, there's some countries we've been in that they feel like I'm in the States. And then there's something like when we were in Colorado Springs, and I just had to keep reminding myself that I was in America. I don't know what the energy there was. Just it may have been actually in the spot we were in, the hotel we were in, but I had to keep reminding myself that I was in America because I felt like I was in another country. It was just the energy. It just didn't feel like I was home. It just kept, I'm somewhere off, and I'm in, you know, because you go into a different mode when you're in a different country.
Yeah,
I guess, and so. I just had to keep reminding myself, okay, what country am I in? Because you kind of reorient yourself ever so often. I go, okay, what country am I in? It's like, you're in America. No, I'm not. What country am I in? You're in America. And it's like, really? And that would be good for about 2 hours, and then I'd have to do it again.
Well, I think it was Johannesburg last year when you said you felt like you were in America. Which I was surprising. Some people think of Africa as being totally
different.
Yeah, but
that area was so Americanized, and it didn't feel, it really had American energy. And then this year when we went to England, I felt very at home there. So it had an American feel. So it could be that I've been there enough, I don't know. But it didn't feel like, oh, it's someplace that's just familiar. It just felt like I've been, or it's like something I've been there enough. It just felt like it had that energy of, you know, that it's okay. It's where you're from. So
anyway, I think you can get an idea out there that our minds are really being screwed around here, not only the time, but where we're at. We travel too much, I think.
No, I don't think we travel too much. We just travel a lot.
To where you really don't know where you are.
But that's part of what they were trying to say a while ago was when you said something about time and the something we do with it, and they said, you really have to let go
of
the concept of time. You just have to let go of it, and then all of this will make sense. And
but we're tied to it.
Only if you choose to be.
Well, you know, we have to be somewhere at a certain time. We have to do things at a certain
time. Yeah, but there's still ways to do that without having time. I mean, you just have to let go of the definitions of it, and it works. It will work. So.
But some people don't...
I don't know how that is. That's just they're just putting it to me that way. It's just
but some people don't wear watches because they don't want to be tied to the concept.
I'm one of them.
Well, you're on that. That was one thing I wanted to bring up here was the next thing I was going to cover. Oh, we get off into these tangents, but I think they're interesting, and we do have interesting discussions on all of this weird metaphysical stuff. But when we were...
Well, I'm just thinking, I mean... We made comments on that. I mean, okay, we're mother and daughter. We're around each other all the time. I mean, look what you're into, and it's been designed this way. Yeah, we have some interesting conversations, and we do this. This is what we do. So
I come across a concept in my work, and we sit and discuss it. Whether it makes it any clearer or not, at least it's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what I wanted to get back here to the trip, and if one part does deal with time.
Yeah.
I think I told you at the end of the last show, we were flying from Perth to Alice Springs.
Fly City.
On to Ayers Rock.
Right.
And as we're flying, you know, it's like the United States. You know you're going through time zones and you're going to lose. This is losing.
Yeah,
we're going that way.
Uh-huh.
You're going to lose an hour or two, like when you go from L.A. L.A. is 2 hours behind us here in Arkansas.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Arizona, those areas are 1 hour behind. So mm-hmm. you know that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're coming in, and Alice Springs is right in the middle of Australia. We're going to land there, and we're coming in, and they're telling us when you land, it's going to be an hour and a half time difference. And I said, what?
Now, she had a real hard time with that one.
I still have a hard time with that one. They were telling us what time
it
was.
Let it go. All of your concepts of time. Just let it go.
Well, they were telling us what time it was going to be when we mm-hmm. landed. Mm-hmm. And I can understand an hour difference, but a half hour? I said, no place just makes it go a half hour. It always goes an hour.
But there are, and you're going to get people telling you how, because now that you've said it, you're going to learn from somebody other than me that, yes, yeah, some countries do half hour stuff.
That's the first one I've encountered.
Yeah, that you've personally encountered. It's in countries that we haven't gone to yet. So.
Yeah, but definitely when I've been crossing Europe and going into Asia,
yeah,
they've all been...
It's not those countries. I've seen it on our chart, but I don't remember what countries it is. So. Mm-hmm.
But anyway, it was only a half hour and a half, and there again, your mind's being really played with.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I just don't understand this at all. Why don't they just make it an even 2 hours? Because they're in the middle of Australia. There's nothing around them. No, there's cities for miles and miles.
Maybe that
and
was
miles.
The whole concept. We're halfway between. So we're going to be on the half hour.
So there's nothing around them for hundreds and hundreds of miles. So why have it like that? And I think then when we left Alice Springs, too, and flew down to Adelaide, it was mm-hmm. still...
Yeah, that was still in the same time zone.
Yeah, it was in that mm-hmm. middle. They were still...
But then when we started moving around, we got the half hour, so it got back on the hour, but then they started doing in and out of daylight savings time, because not everybody was observing it. So then we were dealing with that hour moving in and out.
And all the cities weren't observing it.
Right, right.
But I think it didn't get back to normal until we got to Melbourne, our Gold Coast.
Gold Coast, but then, see, when we went back to Sydney, that's when the daylight savings time thing came in.
It
so that's where it just kept moving. Everything kept moving.
So, I mean, when you...
It was to teach you about the time, that's what I was saying. It was to show you, this is what it's about, it's to show you how malleable time is.
Well, it is malleable when you look mm-hmm. at it like that. Mm-hmm. It makes no difference. It makes no sense.
That's right.
You had no idea what time was going to get light or what time was going to get dark. It was just all...
Oh, that was weird. In Gold Coast, it was light at 4:30 in the morning. I don't know what time it actually got light, but I just know that when I'd wake up at 4:30, it was light out there. So it must have gotten light before that. So see, it's that kind of stuff that was weird. You know, and they would get dark late. They had really long days. So
I was trying to think when it was when I was in Moscow. This is a couple of years ago. Oh, whether it was winter or summer. It may have been summer. And I was laying there, and I could watch the traffic outside. And I was watching the sun as it was going down. I just kept checking through the night to see when is it going to get dark. It was 3 o'clock in the morning before it finally got really dark.
Mm-hmm.
Then, of course, the sun came up a little longer. I guess it has to do with where you are, latitude, longitude.
Right, and we're just used to hear how long, you know, when it goes down, when it comes up, and 4:30 in the morning. It would never come up that early here. I mean, it wouldn't think of it.
Well, you know, I've been to Alaska, and I've been to Norway, but some of those countries in the winter.
So far north.
Yeah, there is no,
right.
mm-hmm. no day at all.
Right, and see, in these countries, like where it did that in the summer, now, as it's coming into summer, now their winter may be where it gets, you know, it doesn't get light until really late or something, or, you know, they have very short days. I don't know.
Some of these northern ones, they talk about the land of the midnight sun,
mm-hmm.
where the sun, you don't have any night at all.
Mm-hmm.
They said the sun dips below the horizon just for a little bit and comes right back up again. Mm-hmm. In the night, mm-hmm. in the winter, whatever it is,
it's the other way.
All the time, and that's very right. depressing.
That would be hard. I'd rather have it be light longer.
It's so cold they can't go outside, mm-hmm. and they're stuck in the house, and it's just perpetual night all the time.
Yeah.
Anyway, I guess it does show that time is malleable, doesn't make any sense, doesn't make any difference.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. But so don't get attached to it. Let it go.
But we have to work with it. And if I,
that's fine. Just let it go.
If I don't show up at a certain time to do that lecture, I think you're going to hear from people. I'm not there at a certain time. Okay, so anyway, all this is very interesting about the times. Let me just get on with the rest of this trip.
Oh, we had a trip there, right. Okay.
Yeah, we get on with the rest of the trip.
Yeah, but we have metaphysical trips, so.
Oh, yeah. Explain what you meant when we were flying. We did talk about Ayers Rock and about you eating kangaroo and crocodile. We talked about that last week. But explain what you meant when we left Alice Springs, and we had to fly some more over this desert to get to Adelaide. Now, going in, we were hitting all these salt lakes.
Uh-huh.
It didn't look like any terrain I've seen. But you were sitting by the window, and you said going to Adelaide, it looked like a different planet.
Yeah, both ways did, but this way it was especially. So I don't know what we were, but it was like, it was probably the same on the other part, too. But we were coming more across, where now we were going down. And it looked unearthly. It looked like another planet. I mean, it just looked like anything you would think would be on this planet. It just totally not. I mean, it was all red, and it had really the topographical kind of markings that were on and everything. It just... It was desert looking. I mean, there wasn't any shrubs, there wasn't any greenery or anything. It was just the way everything looked. It was just had these swirls and it's just hard to describe because it was so unearthly. I mean, it's not like anything I've seen before. It was so unhere. I don't know how to describe it. But it was very red. It was very. I mean, that sand. Not red. Not as red as like Ayers Rock, but. It was that orange, but it was just the way it was done and the patterns and that were in the ground and everything. It was beautiful in a very strange way. It was just, it looked like something that did not belong here whatsoever on this planet. And that's why I just call it's the planet Australia. It really is. I believe so. But it just seems odd because you're saying and they're saying, I mean, that's the center. That was the center of the original land mass on this planet. So obviously it's what's been here longer than anything, but it's so different from everything else I've seen so far in all the places we've gone. So,
well, if you go back to the original continental drift theory, and, you know, it wasn't too many years ago, it's been in my lifetime, that everybody thought, well, that was just a myth that didn't really exist. Just like I can remember when they say jet lag didn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
How could it affect your body? But the original continental drift theory was they showed the map and how all the continents at one time were all hooked together into one big
map. Well, and when
you
look at a map, you can see some of the countries. You can see how they would have easily fit together.
Yeah, now you can. Mm-hmm. But for a long time, they really made fun of that whole idea, and the scientists that were bringing it up, they said, oh, that's impossible, it doesn't make any sense. But that Gondwana was originally Australia. That was supposed to be the central mass when it was all together.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I guess, through the eons and eons of time, with the continental drift, when the tectonic plate began to break apart, and it began to move apart very gradually.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at Africa and South America and all those countries, you could see how they fit together like a gigantic
jigsaw
puzzle.
Absolutely.
And that's how the whole theory of the continental drift came about. But maybe that's part of it. That was the original land.
Yeah, it's like that's not ever been, because see, some of these others, okay, they drifted, but then there's also been land has come up from where none was, and some other land has gone down.
Mm-hmm.
So those things have been moving in and out of water, where maybe this is over here. Now, it had been underwater, because they said Ayers Rock had been at the 500 million years ago. It was at the bottom of the ocean. So that had been underwater.
Yeah, otherwise, how are you going to get all these salt lakes
that
are all over the outback?
So, I mean, that has moved in and out, too. But it's just, you know, but it's not. But yeah, but it's kept salt lakes where, I mean, these other places have been underwater too. They're not salt. We have fresh water here. We've been underwater here eons
this
ago.
This area where we live, yeah.
This used to be a beach. We don't have salt lakes here.
No.
So see, something else going on here.
The mountain we live on, folks, has sand like a seashore.
Right.
And they said at one time it was a beach.
Right.
And at the foot of our mountain is one of the largest limestone deposits in Arkansas.
Right.
And they take it out, you know, to gravel the roads. But it's all full of fossils. And mm-hmm. So, you know, it used to be the bottom of the sea.
Mm-hmm.
So here we are in the middle of the United States.
Yeah, on top of a mountain. And this used to be
a beach.
Seashore. Right.
And also, right, you know, Arkansas is the largest crystal deposit in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just weird if you start looking into mm-hmm. this. Geologists out there may be able to understand some of this, but it is strange.
Well, another thing I found fun on the plane, you're talking about, you watch the maps, you know, and I'm not sure how they do that, and I'm not sure if we can find other maps that will show it that way, but where you can see, like, the water, and you can see shelves under that water, where you can tell that there's land there
uh-huh. Just
under the water. You know, I mean, that's probably a ways under there, but it's like you can see it. And it's like, and where we were looking at was what would have been Lemuria, probably, you know, and it was like, oh, you can see it so clearly probably put some of that land where it looks like it's drifted out, and maybe some of it's just the land has just gone down.
Yeah.
So, but
yeah, because that's what we're publishing a book now dealing with James Churchwood's words. Those of you who are out there, it's going to be out this probably after the first of the year.
Mm-hmm.
James Churchward, back in the 20s, came up with this about Lemuria. Nobody
right.
even knew what he was talking about, and how his theories were about the existing parts now
mm-hmm.
are left of Lemuria.
Right.
Where Atlantis was in the Atlantic, Lemuria was in the Pacific,
yeah.
and the parts that are left is Hawaii,
mm-hmm.
and especially mm-hmm. Kauai, because they said
right.
that's
mm-hmm.
the oldest island.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That is part of it, and then you go down to New Zealand
right.
as part
mm-hmm.
of it, and
mm-hmm.
coming up around, Australia part of it, Japan?
Well, actually, yeah, Japan's supposed to be, I think they said the Ring of Fire, but then in Don Shorn's book, where he was quoting James Churchward's book, because I was reading in there, he was saying that part of Australia and part of North America are part of it, too, so it's like
on the
goes,
edge.
Yeah, on the edges over there, so...
So the main
uh-huh.
part went down in the middle.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The same way with Atlantis. They claim Bermuda
mm-hmm.
and parts of Florida, I guess, and that the Azores over on
mm-hmm.
the other side by Portugal are supposed
mm-hmm.
to be part of
Atlantis,
it.
Okay.
It's around the
mm-hmm.
edge again.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting. Like you said, those are probably the shelves you could see
yeah.
underwater.
I mean, on those views, and it's like we need to find some other maps that show things like that, because that's when it's really obvious, is on those maps. You can tell there's land.
There's something under the water
there.
That
yeah.
went down.
Mm-hmm. Right. So.
Well, you know, in the middle of the Atlantic is the deepest part of the ocean. And... But that, or maybe that's the Pacific. It's the Mariana Trench.
Oh, you were saying it was the Pacific.
Okay, the Mariana Trench.
Because we were going
Trench.
Over it, and we were trying. You could almost see it there.
Supposed
like
to be the deepest part of the world. But it really is a very fascinating thing.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they always say it's a living being. It's constantly moving and shifting too, and
right.
a lot of things happening with it. But I think that is interesting. You thinking it looks like another planet,
mm-hmm.
and. It's amazing how the Aborigines can survive in that kind of environment. Mm-hmm. They've learned how to do it.
Well, they're one with it. So
mm-hmm.
there's not a surviving, they just are.
Mm-hmm.
They are there, yeah. That's it. They just are with it.
Mm-hmm. Because those I know in Australia know that they believe in dream time.
Mm-hmm.
That this is dream time.
Mm-hmm.
The real reality is when you're over
yeah.
there.
When do we wake up?
When you're here, you're in dream time. You're dreaming.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then part of what they have to do when they get to be a certain age is their walkabout. Then they just have them go out into
mm-hmm.
the outback. They have to survive.
Right.
So it's amazing they've learned how to do it. Very
I don't
admirable.
Think learning. It just is. It's their way of
well,
life.
Well,
they are
taught by their parents
right.
and their ancestors. But
we all are done that way. We all are taught how to exist and be within our environment.
That our own environment.
That's their environment. So So that's what
but
they
I
are.
But I think it's very admirable that they have been able to do it and survive.
Okay.
Even today, I mean, with well, I know what you mean, but with the Western influence, let's say that.
But they don't have the Western influence. The ones that are doing that are not influenced. That's what they had said. The one taxi driver said that they had just found someone like the week before that had never seen a white man. Had never seen anybody. They was totally shocked. They didn't know that there were still people out there that were like that, totally isolated. And so that shows you.
There are
these places still out there. That's that remote that man has not gotten to all of them, that we have not gotten, unless
they
man. But, yeah.
Occasionally they find someone in the jungle, or they found them in the islands in the Pacific. They found groups that had no contact with the outside world.
Yeah, this is in Australia. He said they just found somebody. It wasn't that far out either from here. I think that's when we were in Sydney. Oh, no, Gold Coast.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it's a fascinating world, people. Everywhere I go, I want to find more information, and when we can get it from the local people, even the cab drivers, it adds one more thing that I didn't know.
Yeah, cab drivers have a lot of information.
But I like it when I find out something that I didn't know. I think, well, maybe a lot of other people didn't know it, too. Mm-hmm. And it adds to my repertoire in my brain, my overstuffed brain here.
Right.
Okay. Anyway, let's go back to our story. We're probably not going to be able to finish it all tonight, but let's try anyway. One thing we noticed all over our trip, the airport security was a whole lot different than it is in the States. After we left America, we left Honolulu, we didn't have to take our shoes off in any airports.
Right. Yeah, but you still went through scanners, and then if you beeped, they were going to... Then I thought that's when people took their shoes off, as if they were setting an alarm off.
If they were setting it off, yeah. But otherwise, once we got into Australia, we were internal in the country.
The biggest thing is you got to keep your water with you.
Yeah. They didn't take your water away at the airport because they said you're in the country now.
Yeah, well, but it went through the scanner, so as long as it scanned.
And they didn't make you take your shoes off. Mm-hmm. And so it was a whole lot easier and faster going through security all the way until we get back to where we're coming back to the United States.
Yeah, when you go international, then you have to.
And some of it was very little security.
No, it was always security. It just, the biggest thing was they didn't, you know, some of the smaller airports, you didn't have big long lines. So that may have made it feel like there wasn't much, but it still went through the same process. You know, they were scanning everything. Your shoes got scanned, but they were on you when they got scanned. You know, your water got scanned, but it, you know, you got to keep it, but it got scanned. So it was like that. It wasn't that it was all, you know, like no security. There was security everywhere. It just, you know, I don't want people thinking, oh, that's where I can go, you know, to do something, because it wasn't like that. It was just...
It's just not as bad as the United
States. It's not to the extent. I think a lot of this stuff over here is done to make people feel secure. I really think that's a lot of it. It's just, you know, it's just to look like they're, you know, hey, we're doing stuff for your safety and security.
Well, I know there's been this big hassle about the full body scanners versus the pat-downs. That came about while we were gone. They were going to have a protest over Thanksgiving to try to slow the lines down to prove their point. They thought the full body scanners were invasion of privacy. Well, I don't think there's anything there at all.
Well, you know, no. It's a very muffled... I mean, it's just going to highlight if there is something there that shouldn't be there. Anything else is really muffled, and it's not that big a deal. We all look the same. When we get down to that part, we're all the same. What's the big deal?
And it doesn't show that much detail anyway.
It doesn't. And it's not like they're going to, you know, get over it, people. Come on, there's other things. There's bigger things going on, you know, that not conspiracy stuff. We got Earth shift stuff happening. We got exciting things happening. We don't need to be peddling with junk like that. That's ridiculous, you know? Stop majoring in the minors. Get on to the big stuff.
Well, the only things that seem to show up would be metal. It picks up very, very tiny things, anything you leave in your pocket or something.
Right.
That's what they're focusing on. The rest is just a blur.
Right. Yeah. They're doing their job. They're looking for, just like when they do the stuff through the scanner. They have very specific things they're looking for.
And
that's
it's very fast. You go through it very quickly. and people say radiation. Well, they say you're exposed to more radiation in 10 minutes on the airplane.
Yeah, so if you're really concerned about the radiation, then don't fly. Don't go through any of it. Stay home. Drive. Whatever. If that's your concern, then don't do it.
It's not invasion of privacy at all. I think it's more whenever they pat you down.
Oh, absolutely.
So they said prefer that instead of the other.
Absolutely.
I don't think
Absolutely. You
so.
Want invasion of privacy. Yeah.
That's more.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we travel enough that we're not worried about it. Okay, now we got through that part. All right. I've got a little list of notes here so I wouldn't forget what to talk about. Okay. One thing I found was interesting when we got to Ayers Rock, it's like a national park.
Mm-hmm.
And
but it's not like a park over here.
No, definitely
well,
not.
We do have a few national parks like that are desert, and we just know here in Arkansas, a national park is a forest, you know, it's woods. And so we keep thinking of a park like that, and we're like, oh, in Sedona or Arizona, you know, a national park is shrubbery, or it's, you know, it's desert, and that's a park. But and so
Utah is like
right,
that.
Right, Utah. And so you have to think, okay, it's just land that the government is, or somebody is doing, it's controlling or taking
but
care of.
But where we stayed was like a little resort in the middle of nowhere. All the hotels were just in one little place in the middle of this outback desert.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And one thing they told us I thought was interesting is that the Aborigines now have bought.
Yeah, they had just bought it like the week before.
Bought the whole resort.
Yeah, the resort and the rental of the airport or something like that.
There's a little airport you come into.
Mm-hmm.
And there's five hotels in this little, like a little compound.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it is, just hotels. There's a few restaurants, I think, in the hotels,
right.
But that's it. And you only go out of it if you take a bus to go to sightsee
right.
or something.
Right.
So they said they have bought that. The whole resort, the five hotels, and they're renting the airport.
Mm-hmm. And the rental, huh?
And it said they paid $300 million
right.
for the entire thing.
Mm-hmm.
So
so now they own it. So now they will get the proceeds. And this is something that... See, it's like they've taken back ownership of it, is what it is.
Taking their own land back.
Yeah.
And it's like the Indians with the gambling casinos, they're making money finally off of it.
Right.
Don't ask me where they got the $300 million. We never asked about that. But still, would you consider what they got? They got a real bargain. Five luxury hotels and then the rental of the airport. You have to pay them rent.
Mm-hmm.
So the ones, the Aborigines that live around there are going to be doing pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah.
Okay. But then we went on to Adelaide, and we had a talk there, but there we're just in and out, you don't know where you are.
Mm-hmm.
And then we went from there to Melbourne.
Right.
Only in Melbourne 2 days, mm-hmm. doing talks. That's the place where you have the little trolley cars. The only place in Australia that has the little trolley cars. But then we went to Gold Coast, and Gold Coast, I've been there before, but this time we have good friends in New Zealand, and they said, we'll meet you in Gold Coast. It's her favorite town. It's where they grew up.
That's where they used to live.
So when we went there, the man who was putting the whole eastern coast, eastern side of Australia together, we have people on the ground over there who arrange the venues, arrange our lodging. All we have to do is show up. And we said, don't worry about Gold Coast. Our friends were going to take care of our lodging. So when we're getting ready to go, he was telling us, do you know where they're putting you in Gold Coast? No, we don't know, but we know it'll be nice. And he said, it's the tallest building in Australia. Well, we got there. It's called Q1. And we found out in the literature it's the tallest residential tower in the world.
Right. It's tall. It was big. Yeah, it was cool.
And it has apartments on it. It's what it is, like that. It's like apartments.
Mm-hmm.
And when we're going to stay somewhere for a while, we always say, if we can have an apartment, we can cook. We can. We don't have to go out to restaurants. Mm-hmm. We like to have something like
that. Yeah.
But anyway, it was really fascinating. We found the tallest residential tower in the world.
Yeah, it was nice. It was right by the ocean, had a beautiful view.
76 floors. Mm-hmm. We were on the 53rd floor.
Right.
Could look out at the ocean.
Oh, it was a gorgeous view. And that's where it was light at 4:30 in the morning. And we had to close the blinds because it's too much light. We've got to get some sleep.
But on the top floor of Q1 is an observation tower.
A deck, uh-huh.
A deck. And people pay to go up it just like they do in these revolving restaurants in like Seattle, you know, all of that. So people were paying to go up there, and we got to go up there, and yeah, you can see Gold Coast, the whole city, you can see the ocean.
You could see, like, I think you could see Brisbane from
they
up
said
there.
Brisbane,
and,
it was
good. It was a very nice view.
So we said, so we get to see a lot of very interesting things that we don't expect at all.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But when we came into Gold Coast, our friends picked us up at the airport, and we're driving through to go to where we're going to go. And they were just mentioning things that we're going by. And they said, there's a koala bear park.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Julie came unglued.
Well, I mean, that's, you have to understand, going to Australia has always been a lifelong dream of mine. I've always, ever since I saw the opera house, you know, the Sydney Opera House in pictures when I was little, that's all I want to do. I want to go to, I'm going to go to Australia, going to go to Australia. And then the koala bears, I don't remember how I ever saw that. At first, it was like, I want a koala bear. I really want a koala bear. It was just, I've got to go to Australia. Well, then we finally get to Australia. We've been twice. Now I've been twice. And on the one trip, we got to go to a park, so I got to see a little bit of stuff. But it was like, I've not seen any wildlife. I've not seen any koalas. Nothing. Nothing. I work, you know. I know y'all feel sorry for me, but but anyway, most of the time I'm just going from where we're staying to where we're doing the class, and that's it. And it might be just across the street, and it's a busy street, and it could be any street in any big city. And I'm not seeing anything that defines the place. And so,
but she's always wanted to see a koala bear. It was a big dream.
Mm-hmm.
So she heard him say it's a koala bear park. She said, that's where I'm going to go.
I was like, that I want to do. And they're like, okay. So that we did.
We did that the next day.
Right.
And she finally got to see her koala bear and hold her.
I got
koala.
To hold one. I actually got to hold one. A little sweetie, a little Scoogie. His name was Scoogie.
And so I was fulfilling one of her dreams to get to do that, to see the koala bear and to hold a koala bear. And then they had a little train that took us into another part of the park where the kangaroos were.
Mm-hmm.
And that was amazing because the kangaroos were there so tame.
Well, we've seen, you know, you're always hearing about how kangaroos, they look so sweet and everything, but then they'll kick you and they'll do these things. And so I was like, well, we don't know what we're going to get into here. But oh, my gosh. Well, these have been raised. They've been with humans all their lives. They were raised there. They're born there. They've been around humans their entire lives. So, yeah, it was like there's probably about 100 of them out there just laying all over the ground, and they were just rolled around like dogs. They just had their legs up. And
like a dog does. And
but they had such human mannerisms.
They
some of them
played
did.
With each
yeah,
other.
Yeah.
You had to step over them to get through the kangaroos. And he said one of them was laying there like that, and she goes over and starts scratching his tummy.
Yeah, scratch his tummy, and just like, oh, it didn't startle him or anything. He was just fine with that. So, they're real soft, very, very soft fur.
But so was the koala
bear. No, the koala bear was a different. It was not quite as soft. Kangaroo was soft, very soft.
Fur.
And the koala bear was, it was real thick, and it just wasn't as soft as the kangaroo. I expected it to be soft, and it wasn't. The kangaroo was soft. I wasn't expecting that.
But one thing I thought was funny, you know, we know that kangaroos carry the babies around in their pouch. But the babies we saw that they were carrying around in their pouch, I said, my gosh, they should have been out walking a long time ago.
It was like a human carrying a 16-year-old. Like, come on, time to get out now.
But you can see him, the mama hopping around with this they call the joeys, sticking mm-hmm. out of their pouch. There's the head sticking out and these big long legs, and they're hopping along and the baby's head's hitting on the ground. Mm-hmm. And they had a game warden there. I was talking to her and I said, isn't it about time for that one to come out? She said, no, it's got about another month yet. And she's going to carry this great big thing around for about a month. Mm-hmm. And there were some that would jump out
right.
and run around, and they said, well, they're ready. But another interesting thing she said, my other daughter said, well, I know this because I watched the History Channel mm-hmm. and the National Geographic uh-huh. Channel. Well, they told us that the kangaroo stays pregnant all the time.
Yeah, perpetually pregnant.
Mm-hmm. All the time. Now, as a woman, I don't think I would like that.
But yeah, but it's like as the one's ready, about ready to deliver. I mean, essentially, you're delivering. Okay, but the one, like you're saying, it's a month out from being out. I mean, it's been coming and going in that time. But another one has been in there and started growing already. You know, it's born and it crawls out. I don't want to go into too much graphics, but it's birthed the normal way. And then it crawls around and gets into the pouch.
Up the outside of
the outside of the body and gets into the pouch. There are two teats in there, and one is for the one that's been in there, and then the other one is for this one that's coming on, and it grows in there and finds its teat, and then it's doing it. And then the other one's growing, and it's about out, and then when it gets out, then this one will start doing it. It's just constant. You know, it's like they're never without a baby. So.
And she said if they're born the normal way and crawl up the outside of the body, they're only like about an inch and a half
about
long.
About the size of a bean. I mean, it's just,
very tiny. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the only marsupial in the States is the possum. Mm-hmm. And they have a pouch, and but they have more than one at a time mm-hmm. in the pouch, I believe. But that
they show them a lot of times with several babies on them, so they probably
do. And they're very tiny when they're born. But that was amazing that the kangaroo is pregnant all the time.
Mm-hmm, poor thing.
Well, I think she's ready to kick the one out.
Yeah, that's probably why they kick.
They're mad.
Yeah.
So they kick the one out of the pouch, but they got another one coming on. Explains the overpopulation of kangaroos,
mm-hmm.
too.
Yeah.
But I think if I didn't know that, maybe there are other people that don't know it, so I'll bring it up on the show. So I'm always trying to give you information that is very little known.
The metaphysical nature show here.
Yeah, I'm watching the clock, too. But at the end, they said, you got to go and watch these birds be fed.
Oh, yeah.
And they were, what are they?
Lemurs. Lurikeet.
They're not as big as a parrot. There's a lot of wild parrots in Australia, and they're mm-hmm. not as they're bigger than a parakeet.
Right.
But they were going to have the feeding time. So Julie really got her dream that day. She got
I was in wildlife heaven.
Oh, yeah. She was really loving that day. Kangaroos and koala bears and then these birds. And she had a bright pink baseball cap on.
Yeah, cap on. Uh-huh.
And so she went over there, and they gave her the pan of, it's like a liquid.
Yeah.
And
kinda
all
like
these
milk.
Birds come in, and...
Well, they're around these kids, because these kids they have these little stations where they're feeding, and I was like, well, I want to feed. And so I got the pan, and where I was on the end, they weren't coming over, so somebody told me to take the pan and go in among the kids, and then the birds would come over to me. So that's where I'm holding my pan, and stuff, and then I was trying to take pictures at the same time, and that was getting hard. But then all of a sudden, the next thing I know is, because I'm getting in among these kids, and so I was like, okay, I have food too. You know? And then the birds, the next thing I know, there's one lands on my head, and I just feel him.
On that pink hat.
And then on the hat. And then I feel another one, and then another one, and this weight, it's getting heavy, and it's pushing the cap down over my face. And then now they're coming over to my pan. So I've got like a six on my pan, and then they're up on my arm. I probably had like 10 all around that. Then I had these three on my head. I mean, I was the bird woman at that point.
I think they were attracted to the pink hat. So she was laughing. We got lots of pictures. Mm-hmm. So that was Julia's day. She got to fulfill her dream.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And next week we'll tune you in on another one of her dreams she finally got to do.
Right.
Because we're coming up to the hour now. Anyway, we're going to go back to our other shows once we get all of our trip out.
Well, okay. we'll keep interspersing metaphysical things.
We are,
yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I hope you enjoy our travel log when we come back from these trips. So now it's time to sign off, or Don is going to pull the plug on me. So good night, everybody, and thanks for listening.
Good night.